The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, and we are also streaming The Big Lead on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to the weekend. Welcome to The Big Show. I did not know about this. I've been so focused on putting our show together, and we're going to have an exclusive in just a moment to share that everybody needs to be aware of. But there's a march in downtown Seattle today?
Well, it's supposed to go from South Lake Union to mm-hmm. City Hall.
And it's kids?
It sounds like it's going to be students, yes.
Oh, and it's what are they protesting against?
They want people to take... You're just trying to set me up here. They're protesting. They want more action on climate change.
God bless those children. God bless them. I wish that we had been so woke when I was in school. Because you know that most of these kids are going home to play Resident Evil 2. And then they say, oh, yeah, I was in the climate march.
Did you hear that the young woman who I just had on there, she's
no.
a student at Holy Names Academy, started a movement that's actually nationwide. Mm-hmm. If I'd done that at her age, I'd be feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. They're all brainwashed. But, you know, the reason I'm laughing is I bet because Holy Names is, I believe, a
Catholic.
Yeah, it's Catholic, but Seattle Prep is right down the hill from Holy Names, very similar demographics. And it's so funny because every day when I leave work here, as I'm sitting on the bridge to get onto the freeway on Roanoke, all of the Seattle Prep kids are heading home with their parents. And there's always traffic in both directions.
So if they believed in climate change, they'd be walking to school.
Well... It's so funny because I know this is the same way when my girls were in high school. Sometimes you just don't communicate a lot with your kids when you pick them up every single day. But they're in the most gigantic SUVs, and the kids all have this kind of dead look on their face. It's not just Seattle Prep. I mean, this is every high school in the world. But
yes.
They're all sitting there texting somebody on their phone, not talking to mom or dad who's driving, but they're all in these huge SUVs. Let's start at home. If you go to Holy Names, you probably have a median family income that is way higher than the average. And you probably have a pretty big carbon footprint at home. And the kids probably enjoy all the accoutrements of life that go with that, including the safety of mom or dad's SUV that takes them to and from school. But bless their hearts, they're marching in the streets because they have been brainwashed from preschool that President Obama's Martha's Vineyard waterfront estate is going to be underwater in 12 years. And they don't want that to happen because we loved Barack and Michelle. And we don't want them to lose their waterfront estate.
Yeah, but
that they
you
just
say
on.
That knowing nothing about this the people who are taking part.
I don't have
what
to.
They're doing in their. No,
I know about the movement. I know what it's all about. It's just it's kids who have been brainwashed. And do you think they've? Let me put it this way. Do you think they've heard
listening
any dissenting views?
What's that?
Do you think they've heard any dissenting views on the subject? From who?
Sure.
At school?
You can read it. Yeah, certainly in school, too.
Guarantee you they have not. Guarantee you they have not heard one dissenting view from any teacher in 11 years of public school and private schooling. They don't present any dissenting views.
And I would disagree with that.
That is why listening...
Here's a dissenting view. I disagree with that. Because I have sat in a classroom... recently mm-hmm. in high school, and I hear they talk about the different points of view.
On global warming.
Yes.
And what did they present as a dissenting view?
Oh, that there are many people who don't believe in it, and that there are scientists who also refute it, not nearly as many.
Okay, but so they say there are many people who don't believe it
yeah.
in a way to point out
I don't know
that those many people are crazy deniers. And do they ever have those many people in? To present,
I don't know.
I do. Because I asked my girls when they went through school. They never once heard they heard from all these phony baloney experts who told them that the world's dying and you should be anxious and get yourself on anti-anxiety meds because
your
water's going to be thigh deep in 5 years. And
is there anything wrong with trying to do things to protect the environment? Even if it's a little, if it's just a step.
But making these kids so anxious. We have heard from so many children who say that they are riddled with anxiety because, A, their school's going to be the site of a mass murder tomorrow, and, B, that they're going to be underwater and not be able to have children. And they're riddled with anxiety, and they're on anti-anxiety meds. And we're... Anyway, I appreciate the kids striking today for climate change. My show should be mandatory in the schools for all 3 hours of it. It should be absolutely mandatory. They can listen to all of the nonsense from opening bell until noon, and then from noon to three, they got to sit. No bathroom breaks either. They got to just sit and listen to my show and then write a report about what Uncle Dory had to say today. That's the way it should be. Oh, man. And with that as mere prelude.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
You know what my radio show is? I finally have decided. Canary in a coal mine, because a couple of years ago, I told you about a particularly insidious way that jurisdictions all around our state are going to look to sweep up some of your money. And we have seen it now with the Seattle waterfront lid tax, where they told all these downtown condo and commercial property owners, you know what? We need $200 million from you guys so we can pay for this nice, beautiful downtown park that is going to be filled with heroin addicts, but it'll be a nice place for the kids to march when they're protesting the climate, at least until the seas rise and engulf the park with Puget Sound. Why did we build a tunnel if the seas are going to rise? By the way, ask the kids that. If all these experts who know what's happening, why didn't they just shore up the viaduct and keep the cars high and dry instead of a tunnel where everybody's going to drown? Okay, you can bring down the music now. So I told you a couple of years ago about this lid tax, local improvement district. It's a way for a city to impose a tax on people without a vote. It's also a way for the city to take what used to be general city fund dollars and save that for other radical garbage that they like to do. And they are able to tax people for things that a city should be taking care of out of the general fund. Like if you want to build a park on the waterfront. That should come out of the city fund. But instead, they told all these condo and commercial property owners, and it's based on the value of your property. Well, now we just, let's listen a little bit of When the World is Running Down. You make the best of what's still around. This could be the theme of my show, too, because the world is running down all around us. And I do make the best of what's still around. I'll pause it. Okay, so anyway, so they should be paying for these things out of general fund, right? But instead, they said, no, you got to give us $10,000 each. I mean, that's tough to do. There are a lot of people who live in downtown condos, and they bought them 25 years ago. They're not wealthy. The value's gone up. But they're not wealthy when it comes to tax flow. A lot of them are older people. They're on fixed incomes now. And the city of Seattle said, yeah, you got to give us $10,000 because we want to build a beautiful park. Why the city doesn't do that out of the general fund? Because they don't have to. Well, the downtown property owners, they have been fighting back. And the Dory Monson Show has exclusively obtained an email thread between the attorney who is working for those downtown property owners and Seattle City Councilwoman Sally Bagshaw. And if you live in Magnolia, Queen Anne, pay particular attention. But also, if you live in Kent, Tacoma, Snohomish, Redmond, anywhere, you pay particular attention because cities all around Puget Sound area are watching to see if Seattle is going to get away with this taxation without a vote of the people. Because I told you 2 years ago when this waterfront lid was first happening, I told you that this is going to spread like absolute wildfire. And indeed it is. And this is why you don't have to live in Seattle to want to be aware of this, because you must stop this from happening. So Seattle is planning another LID, Local Improvement District, for the people who live on Queen Anne. And why? Well, when the group that's remodeling the Seattle Center Coliseum, they said, oh, no tax dollars. But they also had a deal with the city council that, well, the city will have to beautify the area all around Lower Queen Anne. And so the city is going to declare a local improvement tax district for the people who live on Lower Queen Anne. And they're going to come after them for $10,000 each or whatever the number is that it ends up being. But now I have proof in writing of the plan to go after the people who live in Magnolia, because the Magnolia Bridge that crosses the railroad tracks on the south side of Magnolia there, it's been identified as rickety. And so they say, we got to build a new Magnolia Bridge. Again, Seattle Department of Transportation, record tax revenues to the city of Seattle. They should be able to prioritize and do basic infrastructure. I mean, nothing is more basic for a city than providing roads and safe bridges and safe way to travel. But and a lot of people thought I was full of nonsense when I said, watch how this spreads like wildfire. So the attorney who wrote to Sally Bagshaw said, the city has slipped up. We knew a Queen Anne lid was in the planning, infrastructure, trees, street improvements around the arena and Seattle Center. I guess the city wants to placate Oakview Group, the group that is going to have control of the Seattle Center Coliseum, from any additional mitigation expenses. Dump $100 million on the Queen Anne homeowners. And here's what Sally Bagshaw wrote back to the attorney. Sally here, I am sad because the attorney is trying to overturn this waterfront lid, because it shouldn't be on just the few people who live down by the waterfront to have to pay for a new park in Seattle. Sally here, I am saddened by your position. As a downtown waterfront resident, current council member, your former client, and your friend, please, please know, we have been working on this project since 2004, and we want this lid to succeed. The decision was thoughtfully made. Not only for this project, but for the future Magnolia Bridge, we need the lids to fund major capital projects. Those of us who benefit greatly should pay our share. I'm one who will benefit, and I will have more to pay. It's fair. The council has worked hard to fund the waterfront projects. We do not want to keep revisiting decisions made, and I will urge the council to stay the course. That's from Sally Dime Bagshaw. So I did a little calculating on what this would cost the people who live in Magnolia. So the latest estimate is that a new Magnolia Bridge would cost $400 million. They're originally talking about $210 million, but now they're talking about $400 million. If they put all of that on the people who live in Magnolia, there are about 10,000 households in Magnolia, that would work out to $40,000 per household, where they just come to you and say, hey, write a check to the government. Why? Because you have to. We say you must. Now, the final number, I don't think they could get away with $40,000 per household. Maybe they whittle the cost of the bridge down to $250 million. And maybe the city says, well, we'll come up with $50 million of that. And then, oh, it's only going to be $20,000 per household. Is that fair? Is that fair in your view? Without any vote of the people, a way that they can continue doing their ridiculous bike lanes that accomplish nothing. They spend tens of millions, $100 million, on bike lanes in Seattle. We can spend money on the most frivolous of nonsense, but for the things that should be the bedrock, fundamental essentials of government, like roadways, infrastructure, and then public safety is the other one, they are going to make you pay an extra tax so that they can continue building out their bike lanes for the 3% who use them. And the game goes on. But anyway, I have that email from Sally Bagshaw now that confirms Magnolia, you're next. Redmond, Kent, Tacoma, you're next if you don't know about this sort of thing. And that is your big lead.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, we're going to check the news. And then Friday afternoon, big game Sunday night for the Seahawks. Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks, will join me. The Pete Carroll Show coming up next.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
All right, here we go now, here we go now, here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is brought to you by Pizza Hut and the Pro Club. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, it's Friday afternoon, and as has been the case seemingly all season, it is another huge game coming up. This is another primetime game, Sunday night in Los Angeles against the Rams. And as he does every Friday, the coach of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, joins us. Hey, coach, good to talk to you.
What's up, Dory? How are we doing?
How about this? 10-2 Seahawks, tied for the best record in the entire NFL. That's not too bad at the end of the three-quarter mark.
Well, going into the finish, we got a chance. And that's all we really were asking for. So we got a shot at it. So we're going to take it one at a time and see what happens here.
Okay, and I know your answer is always, we haven't accomplished anything yet. But I don't think too many people thought you guys were going to, you know, be in the hunt for the best record. And you have to be, especially with as much fun as you and the team seem to be having, you have to be particularly proud, excited, however you want to put it, about how this season has gone.
Well, yeah, we're pleased so far, you know. But remember, those expectations for those people you're talking about aren't the ones in this building.
Right.
You know, we were counting on doing pretty well here. And it kind of took a while to get to where we are now, and we got a shot to battle and control what's happening in the future, and that's all we could ever hope for at this time. So we'll see where it goes, and good stuff can happen here if we get a couple more wins.
Okay, and good stuff really happened Monday night, which did have the feel of a playoff game because, you know, getting that into first place for now was on the line. It was just a great atmosphere and just a terrific win against a team that had been playing really, really well.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, that was going to be a challenge that would be like a playoff game at, you know, at C-Link, and everybody was there for it, ready to go and revved up, and it felt like it, and the prep, the quality of the club that we were playing, you know, all that stuff was all there, and so it's a really good opportunity to come out on top, and there's a lot of positives there, and in the way it happened again, you know, we're behind a little bit, trailing, and then we come roaring out of that third quarter in great shape. And then we want, I guess there's still a little flair for the drama around here. So
Yes, there is.
We made it a little bit closer than it needed to be, but still it was a really, really good solid win. And lets us know that, you know, we're playing good teams these last few weeks here, and we're able to hang on to them and hang on to the wins. And so it gives us a sense of confidence it's going to be important down the stretch.
Well, and we've talked a lot the last few weeks about that confidence and about how, you know, you are imposing your will. I mean, 218 yards rushing is imposing your will and the type of style you love. And that has to be particularly gratifying.
Yeah, I really like the formula that you know, that's showing up. I would like to see us take care of the football a little better, but other than that, the stuff is happening, you know, that makes us a good club. And we did a lot of good things on defense, and the big surge in the third quarter that turned it around was really kind of expressed by the defense. And that with the running game makes us really hard to beat. Special teams played really good again and really solid and complete throughout, and we got the big play out of the teams also. And, you know, those are the kinds of that's the makeup of the winning that we know and understand and are looking forward to keeping going.
Yeah, well, I heard earlier in the week, because everybody loved the fake punt, and we heard what Wyman said on the play-by-play call, and then I heard that it was kind of a variation on your nickname that you had earlier, huh?
Well, there's, you know, that's a long time ago, Dory.
Okay.
Now, there was a time back in college, you know, we were such a good team, we could kind of go for it whenever we needed to, and so the band started some little chant going on here that kind of carried over for a few years.
Okay. All right, so it was more about football and not anything else.
Yeah, more. It's always about the ball.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of a double entendre there. Okay, Russell Wilson said something after the game on Monday, and I want to play you just a brief cut of what he said.
I think you got to have a clutch gene, and I think we have that as a team. You know, we have that clutch gene. We've been clutch all year. When the game's on the line with, you know, up by seven, down by four, or whatever it may be, we find a way to win them. And I think great teams, great players, they find ways to win them. And I think that we have that clutch gene, and so we just want to keep that going.
The clutch gene. Now, Pete, the only way I know that you can alter genes is you're messing with the DNA. So it leads me to the question, are you a mad scientist, Pete Carroll?
Well, I don't know that. I wouldn't think my scientific background or science background is not very plentiful here. So I don't think it has anything to do with that. But there is something that maybe let's talk chemistry.
Okay.
Maybe we can talk chemistry.
All right.
That I think that you know, if you get the right bunch of people together with a really positive attitude and they work really hard, where they develop, you know, the kinds of reasons why you can believe in yourself, then a lot of good things can happen. So we definitely are leaning that way. We have a lot of belief, and we got a lot of positive, and we got a lot of hard workers, and so it is adding up to a pretty good makeup.
Well, and as I was listening to Russell talk, it could have been listening to you talk, and I had the thought that, you know, other great notable coach-quarterback combos, you know, Brady and Belichick, they seem like very different people, and Drew Brees and Sean Payton, they don't sound alike. You and Russell sound alike. I mean, it's like you've adopted the same outlook, the same mentality. And I was wondering, how much of it is just Russell has adopted that from you? Have you adopted some of your from him? I mean, how has this evolved?
Well, no, I don't think it's that. I think Russell was brought up and mentored by his father, who was a very strong figure in his life and very positive and very challenging, you know, in his makeup and as he was growing up. To be positive and to trust in your abilities and to believe in yourself. And Russell came to us with a really strong mentality, you know, from the very beginning. And he hasn't wavered at all. So he hasn't changed much, and I haven't changed much. So I think it's more there's a common kind of outlook and perspective that we share that we just have brought together. I don't think that. You know, I think I've supported him as he's supported everything that I'm going for, too. So I think that part has made us stronger. But I really think that we're just kind of similar in the way we see things.
And how much of that did you know when you drafted him? I mean, and how much of it was just serendipity? And as his character was revealed, you just realized this is my kind of guy.
Well, for sure, Russell was pretty hard to take in a sense, you know, because he had so much going for him and had so much. So much outlook and approach and philosophy and things he believed in, just like he does now, that it was almost too good to be true, you know. And so, but I think I might have mentioned this in the past, that somebody had said something to me, you know, along the way that, you know, he's going to sound like he's saying stuff that you're not going to believe, you know, he could ever back up or whatever. But we were advised to give him a chance because he really believes he can do stuff and he's likely going to pull it off. And so from the beginning, you know, I listened to him like, maybe there's something to this, you know, and I was hoping. And sure enough, he's been a great champion and an excellent competitor.
Yeah, well, I just don't know if there's ever been a coach and quarterback more in sync than you two seem to be. So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool to watch. All right, hold on, Coach. Pete Carroll's going to spend the rest of the half hour with us. We will talk about the big Sunday night football game that is coming up against the Rams, a game you will hear right here on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. Pre-game at 2, kickoff at 5:25 Sunday Night Football. And our conversation with the coach, the Pete Carroll Show, will continue here on the Dory Monson Show. Seahawks coach Pete Carroll is with us. And before I get to the Sunday night game, Coach, one other quote that I wanted to play for you. Because, you know, I make a living with words. And if I can learn something from you, like I walk around all the time saying you can tell a trapper by his skins. And
by his furs.
Oh, yeah, shoot. Man, I'm misquoting you all the time.
It's the right idea, though.
Okay. There was one from after the game that I'm trying to figure out if I should incorporate into my language here.
Was Trey Flowers one of the guys that was sick this week?
Matter of fact, he was. Yeah. Yeah. He Buicked in the garbage can between plays at one time in 7-on-7 or something like that.
Did you say he Buicked in a garbage can?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
I've asked 20 people if they've ever heard that before. I've never heard that.
Is that right? Well, I don't know really where it came from. I don't take responsibility for that one. Somewhere along the line, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's puke and all that kind of stuff that you can say. I've always liked Buick.
Buick. Okay. All right. I might start.
That's what it sounds like.
Oh, man.
My bad. Sorry.
No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It shows we just have a comfort level here. Tell me about Chris Peterson, the man. Big news this week that he's stepping aside as Huskies coach. And you and I have talked only very briefly about him. But, you know, your work history kind of gives you some unique insights here, I would think.
You know, well, interestingly, I didn't know who Chris was, but we watched their play and the style of play and the stuff they did when he was at Boise, and when he would play the big Pac-12 teams, Pac-10 teams at the time, and play them really well and beat some of them. You know, we studied them and we found that they really had a high tech level of ball on offense and defense, and so I always just admired, you know, the work that they did from back then. So when we had a chance to meet him when he finally got here in the area, I just fell in love with the guy because he's just such a one. I knew he had the football background, but he's got such character and principle about him and a tough mentality and leadership skills just oozing out of him, you know, and his style is he's tough and demanding, but he's a really good, thoughtful, you know, kind of well-balanced guy. And so I think the world of his work and him and all that. So, and I really support the heck out of his decision, you know, because if he figured it out and came to that conclusion, it's the right thing for him and he'll make it the right thing. And whatever happens next, you know, he'll figure that out too. So I think the world of Chris and the work that he does and, you know, we're going to miss him, you know, coaching the Huskies and all that, but he gave him everything he had and gave him a great product.
Yeah, second best winning percentage in all of college football. I mean, ahead of even Nick Saban right now. So are the pressures tougher in college where you are recruiting 365 days a year? But you got to deal with boosters. You can't delegate as much, it seems. Is that the reality of it?
Well, the demands are constant, and it is because of recruiting. And there's the booster stuff, too. You know, you have your following that you are more connected to than we are in the NFL. directly, you know, where you have like more responsibility to kind of, because you're raising money all the time, you know, and we're not raising money here, but, and so they, there's more duties and it's harder to get away from it. So, the football thing is different in that, you know, the time frames are dictated by the NCAA and all that kind of stuff, but the demands of the job are constant and you got to really be on it. And, it's for anybody that steps away from it, you know, I know enough about it to say I totally get it. And it's all consuming job, and there's not a whole lot of other lifestyle around that. So, you know, I know I heard that Chris, you know, was talking about family and some things he wants to do and all that. So, you know, more power to him. He kicked butt and he did a great job.
Would you have burned out if you had stayed at USC?
You know, I don't know that. You know, I don't know. You know, I think that I was fortunate to have the opportunity to come here. I think, you know, we had been there 9 years or whatever, and they were great years, and they were really the most fun I ever had was there, and I loved it. So, but the challenge is what drew me away from it. But I don't know. I didn't quite get there. You know, I didn't get to that point.
Okay, got it. All right, let's talk about this game on Sunday night. How are the injury situations? And you know, Ziggy Ansah, Jadeveon Clowney, Dwayne Brown, Michael Kendricks, how are we looking with all these guys?
Well, Michael has not practiced yet during the week, and with his hamstring that kind of just wouldn't go away. Luke's not practicing. He's not quite back yet. But those other guys are out there. We'll see. We're going to go all the way to game time with those guys and think that they got a chance. You know, Ziggy's got to get back from this shoulder, and Clowney's been practicing throughout, and those guys look pretty good. But I don't know about Ziggy until we get through all the way to game time.
Okay, and how about Dwayne Brown?
He's fine.
Okay, got it. Okay, tell me about the Rams. I mean, they're in a situation. They're defending conference champs. They pretty much have to run the table if they want to make the playoffs. They're highly motivated. You're competing for the best record in the conference. You're highly motivated. That's pretty good matchup going in for a Sunday night primetime game.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to, you know, with our team and with their team, it's not going to matter exactly about the numbers and stuff. We're going to go for it no matter what, and they are too. They're a championship club with all of that background and makeup and players that have the dynamics to just win games, you know, and they have a numbers of guys that are good. So this is a great matchup again, you know, and to go on the road and to do it down in L.A. will be fun, but we expect them to be really hard in all phases to deal with, and we have a lot of respect for the talent.
And they looked great this last weekend against Arizona, and they looked just
like a perfect looking ball game for them, you know. And they on all cylinders they were hitting it, and so we're seeing nothing but a really impressive latest game to deal with.
Well, have fun. Starting the fourth quarter of the season, I know this is your time of year. This is what you guys point for. So what a great way to start the fourth quarter in prime time again.
Yeah, we're really excited about finishing, you know, and this is that time. And, you know, we work at it all year long to get to this point where we have a shot at making a big finish. And hopefully we can take this one day at a time and see if we can start knocking some stuff off and really make this a fun season.
Yep, it has been so far, that's for darn sure. All right, Pete, have a great trip down to L.A., and I will look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, George, see
you. Okay, the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll. The Pete Carroll Show every week, 12:30 to 1, here on the Dory Monson Show. All right, we're going to check the news for you, and then the Fastest 50 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.